welcome one and all once again to New World in episode 138. We're coming to you this very, 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 very non-eventful gaming week. But before we get to that, we are joined this week by Daniel.
Hello.
And Anthony.
Remember me?
His name was Anthony,
like
right?
A Metroid. That was a Metroid Other M reference. Remember when that game exists? You can't take it back.
I like that game.
The game was fine. Whenever I think about the storyline and Samus curling like a little baby when she ever saw Ridley, it was kind of like,
You see, I've always felt that was one of those, and I know people hate that term, the narrative dissident, where the game itself is fine.
Yeah.
It's the story that's broken, but when you're playing the game, it's perfectly... I enjoy the game itself. The story,
yeah.
I can do without, but... I don't really support most game stories, so it's not a big deal breaker. The only thing was you couldn't skip cutscenes.
Yeah, and people disagree with the story, but, I mean, the story was told beautifully, especially that flashback to Super Metroid.
Yeah, and I have an article up on the website, like, 2 or 3 years ago. I think some of it was okay. I think some of it was a bit overblown, especially the stuff with Richie and how she reacted to him. It's not that different than if you ever watch, like, Terminator 2. It's the same way that Sarah Connor kind of reacts to Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator when she sees him again. Even though she destroyed him, it's like, if you destroy something, you don't expect it to keep on coming back and back and back.
Well, you should do if you're a Nintendo character.
Well, I mean, I don't think Mario's surprised by Bowser because I don't think he ever assumes he kills him. And Link and Ganon are so different because they're different characters over the time. I think in this case it's just the fact that she has killed him. I mean, she's throwing him up, she's throwing up the fan that he's been on. Like, you would think that he should be dead.
You would think. But which came first? I mean, I forget the chronology of the Metroid games, whether Metroid Prime came first or Other M, or I forget when.
I think Prime is before Other M.
Yeah, Prime is... Well, I mean, technically speaking, it depends on who you're asking. Nintendo sometimes says it's not in the continuity. But I believe Prime is between Metroid 2 and Super Metroid.
Yeah, there should be more of a timeline in the Metroid series than there would ever be in the Zelda series, since it is the telling of one hero.
Well, there is a timeline. I mean, Fusion is the last game in the series. Other M bridges Super and Fusion. It takes place between those two games. Then Metroid 2, the Metroid Prime trilogy, and then Super Metroid is the timeline. So there is a coherency there. The problem with that, and I think this is the problem with a lot of story games that do tell one story, is after a while you do get to the point where it's like, we've kind of told the story we wanted to tell, but we want to make more games. So
Halo. Sorry. Yeah. I don't know what came over me just there.
Well, I mean, we've seen this with a couple, because, you know, we've had the year of prequels last year with Gears of War, Judgment, God of War, Sentient, Batman Arkham Origins, and stuff like that, where it's like, okay, we've told this straightforward story, we came to this conclusion, this game is really popular, how do we fix it? Okay, we're going to tell a story here, we're going to tell a prequel, we're going to tell a side story, we're going to tell a story in between these events. Like, God of War is really guilty of that as well. There's what, Origins, there's Ghost of Sparta, there's Ascension, Borderlands, the pre-sequel, but yeah, it's that whole thing where Zelda works because Zelda can jump around. It's like, okay, we're going to tell a prequel, but Ocarina of Time 3 doesn't have to tie in too much with A Link to the Past.
Right.
And then we could put Twilight Princess and Wind Waker in between those two, because why not?
If anything, it's more of a history of Hyrule instead of Link.
Well, I mean, it is technically speaking, and I don't want to sound like a show, it is technically The Legend of Zelda. It is the story that gets passed down from generation to generation. It's how I see it. It's kind of like a story that kind of evolves and changes, but it's the same story. It's the same three main players. And it's like, okay, you know, this... You know, you could basically say it's pretty much the remake of the same game over and over again, because it is a legend that maybe it's being passed down from generation to generation. And this is how I heard it.
That's why I love Majora's Mask, that it did break away from that mold. It was great.
I don't mind the mold, because...
Still waiting for that 3DS remake.
Yeah, the only problem I have with it is, like, sometimes you do get to develop a lot of these interesting characters who you know won't return. Like, I'm a huge fan of Goose from Skyward Sword.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Vedna from Twilight Princess. Tetra from Wind Waker, even though she does return in Spirit Tracks. and stuff like that, because you want to start fresh and you want to. So, you know, there are places for them to expand on it. I'm happy that they don't, like, okay, we're just going to stay in Ocarina of Time and just keep on making games in that universe. We're going to make a bunch of games in Skyward Sword universe and stuff like that. But there's a ton of interesting characters that do develop and kind of, you know, become interesting on their own, but we never see more of them. And the only reason I'm letting this conversation go is because we really don't have anything to talk about this week.
We have one thing.
We have one, well, two things. Daniel has a new game to talk about, but it's like this. Really, there was no major. I guess Trials Fusion and the Mario Golf demo in Europe.
Freaking Europeans!
But I don't
got me
know.
Excited.
Well, we get it next week.
We do?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I already have it pre-ordered from Amazon, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, I mean, we get the demo next week. The game's out in 2 weeks.
True. Oh.
I played the demo. I can talk about that as well if you want me to.
Please do.
Let's just start there then.
Okay, so it's kind of what you expect from a Mario Golf game, to be honest. You have it plays the same as the other ones. The game looks really good. I was very surprised at how good it looks on the 3DS and the 3Ds, as you come to expect from Nintendo, is used very well, especially considering you can kind of see the ball sort of casting across the course. In the demo, it has about sort of five levels, and each of them have like three holes, so you get a really good feel of how the game plays. I'm not going to pre-buy the game after being excited about it, simply because, like, I really like Toastal Tour because it really felt good, and it just doesn't feel as good as Toastal Tour, and I'm just looking for just Toastal Tour on the 3DS.
It doesn't. That's kind of disappointing.
Does it feel like? Did you play the original?
No, I've only played Toastal Tour. That's the only other one I've played. So that's why I'm not particularly interested on the basis that it doesn't feel like Toastal Tour. It plays the same, just like, I don't know, Toastal Tour just feels a lot more satisfying. It might be because of the GameCube controller and it has a really big A button, I don't know.
I mean, it seems like this kind of follows in that, because if I remember, Mario Golf 64, while fun-ish, was also kind of like a golf game, and I think Toadstool Store was, okay, you know what I'm talking about. The GameCube one was more, it felt like more of a Mario game. They added more fantastical elements to it with the course design and some of the mini-games. Do they have any of the mini-games on the demo?
There aren't any mini-games on the demo, but they sort of, they go with the, they run with the course design. Because the thing that always got me about Toadstool Tour was, aside from the fact that you're playing as Mario and Peach and all that, the graphics were kind of realistic, which is really strange. Whereas it's all, like, you have like a Yoshi's Island themed, you have Yoshi's Island themed courses, and you have like normal sort of Mario Mushroom Kingdom kind of courses.
Are you saying that's so, 3DS or for Toadstool Tour?
3DS.
Okay.
So there's a lot of variety in the courses. The only problem with that is you can't, like, every time you change to a different theme, you have to get used to what the rough looks like and what the sand looks like and stuff. So, but other than that, it's a Mario Golf game and it works exactly the same way. I don't know if this is new or not, but you get like power-ups. The Mario themes, there's the mushroom, there's the fire flower, although I didn't have any of those.
I think
demo.
That is new.
I believe that is new, but it's been, I mean, the last game in the series was the GameCube one, which was about a decade ago.
It was the
ago,
Game
right?
Boy Advance one.
Was there? Oh, yeah. Which was around the same time, wasn't it?
It was about the same time, but it was just after.
Yeah. So it's been about a decade, so yeah, it's been a while since I've played them, but I think the power-ups are new.
And I didn't actually have any of those, so I didn't get to play with them. But they are adding things. It's just not what I was looking for, I guess. So it's good. If you like Mario Golf and you've liked all of them beforehand, you're going to like this one, because it's not really any different. Also, I have played the Phoenix Wright versus Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney is the official name, which is kind of a mouthful if you keep saying it. And this game is very good. Like, I was just expecting to go into it going, oh, I'll just go past the latent bits, you know, I don't care about the latent bits, and I'll play the Phoenix Wright bits. But it turns out that playing 999 in Vertizor's Reward trains you quite well for the Professor Layton puzzles. So I actually quite enjoy the Professor Layton sections. And it basically is what you would expect. Like, it's a Professor Layton game one minute. It's no different from the Professor Layton games. And then all of a sudden it's not jarring or anything, but it sort of does a nice transition. And all of a sudden you're defending people in court with Phoenix Wright, and sometimes Layton turns up there as well. And the scenarios that you get in the court sections are probably some of the best in the Ace Attorney series, if you ask me. You have to do a lot of thinking, and it's not a case of they just put the core mechanics in. They actually have a new thing where testimonies can be given by up to 5 people at once. And sometimes when you press somebody on a statement, somebody else will say, like, will have something to chime in about that statement, and then it gets to a point where they introduce the idea of statements that people make would contradict the statement that somebody else makes. So you have to not only cross-check the testimonies with the evidence, and they have this thing called the Grand Grimoire that you have to check as well, but also you have to check testimonies amongst each other, and it's really cool. There's a lot to think about, and it makes really interesting scenarios in the courtroom. And aside from some nitpicks, the presentation is, the graphics are okay. I mean, you have to, it's a 2012 game, like, that they only just managed to localize.
Is it really that old?
Yeah, that's how long it came out in Japan. And so obviously it doesn't look as good as Ace Attorney 5, but the music and the...
that's why I'm excited for the music.
The music is so good. It is incredible.
I'm so tempted to just look up the soundtrack and listen to it at work, but I kind of want to just save it for when the game comes out here.
That's the best idea, is to save it for when the game comes out, because it works so well in, like, where it's used, and it's so good. You just... I bought a new pair of headphones a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, okay, I'm plugging these in because I need to hear this music, like, in the best way that I can.
Yep.
That's how good it is. Some of the voice acting is not great. Phoenix's voice actor, not only is it different from the one in Ace Attorney 5, but he doesn't put a lot of emotion into it, which is kind of disappointing. And it sounds like they just took the raw recording, which is very high quality, just they didn't add any, like, effects to it. So if they're in a room that would be echoey, it's not, which is unknown. But it's everything you would. If you're a Phoenix Wright fan, buy the game. If you're a Professor Layton fan, buy the game. And if you like both of them, then this is a fucking treat, because you're gonna love the crap out of this.
If you it's ever get good. A release date here.
If you ever get a release date. Yeah, the game is fantastic, and I would recommend it to people who love either of those games.
Okay. Anthony, have you been playing anything?
In preparation for NES Remix 2, I decided to try and 3-star everything in the first one, NES Remix 1, and I think of, like, 4 challenges away from doing it, and I'm just thinking, like, I'm almost going to buyer's remorse with this one because of all of the great titles going to be included with number 2. You have the good ones like Mario and Zelda.
And those are the good ones.
Yeah, but then you have, like, freaking... Oh, my God. Like, trying to play tennis on the NES. Who would buy that game?
Well, you have to realize that this is way back when. This is why my nickname for NES Remix 2 is the Games You Want Edition.
Yes. Well, I'm just talking about, like, you know, I'm glad that you, really glad that you bought, you know, NES Remix 1. Here's the list of games that you can buy and play on your own. If you want to buy tennis, that'll be $5 that you have to pay us, not the other way around. Jeez. Like, it's so
my favorite is Ice Climbers, because they didn't get their jumping mechanics down.
Oh, tell me about it.
So it's really, really off-putting.
Yep.
And I'm just
you have to get like a 3 second running start to get any distance on your jump, and then you have to clear the ledge completely or he'll fall through it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing that, like, you can't, like, be on the, you can't, it has to be completely on the edge. And you can't even, like I guess it's something they included with Mario, and I'm so used to playing Mario games. You can't really adjust yourself in midair. You kind of are, once you make a jump, you're hitched on that. Like, you can't change midair.
Right.
It's like, if you're just short.
Which, I mean, that makes more physical sense than anything.
Oh, it makes more physical sense, but it doesn't make the game more fun. It's tough. Especially if you have moving platforms and you misjudge it by a second, then you have to wait until it comes back around. And as you said, you're 3-star on these, and these are all time challenges. The one that bothered me is, I think, pinball, when you have to get the sails to dance. Because that seems so random. Like, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't seem like there's any skill involved with that. It just seems like you get a lucky bounce and it goes through.
I mean, yeah, there's a little bit of skill involved, but I mean, it's no Zen pinball, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, so there's a couple of moments like that. There's a lot of there's a reason why we don't see Ice Climbers 64 or Ice Climbers Galaxy.
Yep.
There's a reason why we don't have Balloon Fight Prime or something like that.
It was fun that they brought Balloon Fight back for Nintendo Land.
Yeah, and I think Nintendo Land spoiled me on Balloon Fight because in the original, you realize how much they improved it on Nintendo Land.
I will say, though, one that did surprise me, I wouldn't buy the game on its own, but I enjoyed the challenges, was Clue Clue Land. The simple mechanics of that was fun for me.
I think so. I think, and I don't want to give them ideas. I think the idea of, especially something like Ice Climbers, not Ice Climbers, Balloon Fight, which they already done. I think something like that, if you remade the games with better controls in a Nintendo Land engine where it looks like, it doesn't look like it's a super expensive engine, but it looks like something that you can apply to many games. I think those would be nice eShop, because, I'm sure there are fans of these games, especially Ice Climbers and stuff like that, who are in Smash Brothers. Are they in... They're not in the new one, are they?
They haven't been announced yet, no.
I wonder if they're going to be dropped, because he doesn't want to do any transforming characters.
Well, I mean, we'll say that, but that follows the same kind of mechanics as Rosalina and Luma.
I guess that's true. Well, except it seems like Rosalina can function on her own. It's not like you KO the Luma and then Rosalina's nerfed. It's, that's always been the big problem with Ice Climbers. Is that if you get rid of one, the other one's kind of handicapped big time.
But I still wouldn't call it a transformation. So, like, take that's what I do. What I am kind of looking forward to. I'm interested to see how they're going to balance it. But they have plenty of characters that are going to operate differently. And the one I'm thinking of in particular is, I mean, there's Pikmin, obviously, with the plucking the mountain, strategizing your attack that way. There's Little Mac with that KO meter and whatnot. And how he's completely ineffective in the air, but a powerhouse on the ground. And then Rosalina and Luma, trying to do your fighting style there. I think it's really cool that they're making these characters seem really different and unique.
Yeah. I mean, that's always been the perk, the charm of the Smash Brothers series. And I guess it's because they come from so many different gaming universes. It's that everybody can bring over their own style while still kind of fitting into this game where nobody seems out of place. I'm curious about Little Mac because he does seem to be a lot more close range than any character we've seen before.
He seemed like too powerful, so I was glad when they said that they were going to make him, his recovery sucks and different things like that.
Yeah. Well, have you been playing anything else?
I mean, I got Mario 3 when it was released yesterday, and I'm a pretty terrible person at when I buy something. Like, I would say I've watched maybe 20% of the movies I bought after I bought them.
Hang on, you only just got Mario 3?
No, I've had it, but they...
No, I mean, on the modern consoles, yeah.
Wii U and 3DS was released on Thursday.
We got that after the Christmas downtime.
I remember that, because I remember thinking, it's like, they've had to have had it out by now, and then I was looking for release dates, and then... I knew that Europe got it. Yeah, you said like after the Christmas.
And did you get the early discount on it as well?
I had it on the Wii, so it was just $1 on Wii U, but 3DS is still $5.
I think you meant it was like a cheap price when it first came out or something.
Yeah, for the first week it was £2 something, and then it went up to £3.50 after that. Here.
No, it's $5, and it will stay that price.
Oh. That's interesting.
They're doing a lot of interesting deals in Europe that we don't get. Like, I know they have one with Super Mario Kart and Mario Kart 8.
And they're doing it with they're doing the temporary discount thing with Pocket Football Club as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting one as well.
They're marketing the hell out of Mario 3 online. Like, they have it has its own website and.
I was actually going to write an article about that today because I think that's a good case for what they do with the Virtual Console, except they don't do it that often.
Right.
If you're going to drip feed games, make every game seem like a big deal because yep. like they've been tweeting about it for the past week and a half. They have a trailer, they have a website, they've been sharing all these fun facts. It makes it seem like it's a huge deal instead of just like here's a Thursday, we're going to dump out these two or three games. Now, if you do that with every game that's important, it's a better idea. Otherwise, it makes no sense to drip feed them because the whole idea should be that you want to make everybody want these games. They did that with Earthbound, and they've done it here. Those are the only two games they've really done it for. But, I am all for, and especially, coming from NES Remix, I guess it's too late now. Like, they know which games are good and which games aren't. Like, get those games out there first. Like, do Solid of the Month, just push it like 12 games that you know are crap, and then build up the big one at the end of the month.
Yeah.
But, I have not picked it up yet because I don't know which one I want to get. And I know when I say that, if I ask for advice, people are just going to be like, why doesn't Nintendo have cross-buy? Which I'm sure you want. But I don't know if I want to get the 3DS version or the Wii U version.
I got the Wii U version and immediately I didn't feel the need to buy the 3DS version because I'm going to play through the whole thing and then I won't be playing it for months and months. And I have, like, this is why I love the 3DS so much. Like, I have so much on it that I still have not played. And that's why I said, like, with Mario 3, it's like, okay, I'm going to buy it and actually beat it instead of just leaving it on the system. Because I was clamoring for years for Nintendo to release Zelda Oracle of Ages and Seasons on 3DS Virtual Console, and I still haven't gone through them. Like, I mean, I've gone through a little bit of Ages, but then other stuff came up, whether it was... I forget when I came out, but like I still have Layton to continue through. I'm making progress on that. That's what I've been playing mostly on 3DS. But then also Phoenix Wright, the Oracle games, and just a bunch of other small things like what's that SteamWorld Dig? Bought that. Really haven't gone through it. It's just money burning a hole in your pocket, and when you have that money in your account. That's the business beauty of digital.
I know that feeling. I've got so many games on my 3DS that I haven't finished yet.
Yeah, I feel like Steam Syndrome, what they do on those Steam sales. If Nintendo did anything like that, I would be in horrible, horrible trouble.
See, they started that, and I'm really disappointed they didn't follow it up. Again, going back to the Virtual Console, they had that period of time where they were going to 30 cents Virtual Console releases.
Yeah,
and I pretty much bought any game that came out that time because 30 cents is who's not going to buy a game for 30 cents? And then I forgot what they did with Mega Man X2. I think it was like $2, which is why I picked it up as well. I'm really cheap. The reason I was going to buy Super Mario Bros. 3 on the Wii U was because of the Digital Deluxe promotion, and I get money back. Like, I'm happy that you get money back even if it's a sub Nintendo game. Like, I got Super Mario World from Club Nintendo, and then I checked, and then you get 79 points for it anyhow, which is awesome. And then you get the Club Nintendo points for it as well. So it's paying for itself, even if it's already kind of free.
Right.
In that case, I would go for the Wii version as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's only going to be like 50 points, but I mean, that's...
They add up.
Yeah, that's exactly. I need 224 points to get my next $5, and that's going to be NES Remix 2, and hopefully Shovel Knight at some point. And
Is that the one by Game Freak?
No, that's Harmony Knight. Harmo Knight. Shovel Knight is the Mega Man-esque digger, I guess. It's a platformer where you have a guy who has a shovel.
It's like Castlevania.
Okay.
Give people the shovel.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And I've been playing more of Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga.
Yes, that's on my list too, jeez.
I honestly thought it was Dream Team, but this franchise has always gotten the most out of its assets, like reusing the same, like having you go through the same environments multiple times. Like, it's not a big deal because they always seem to offer some quick travel, I think I mentioned this when I talked about it the first time. I still find it weird that for an RPG, there's no type of Hylian stations for you. There's no inns. There's no, like, Hylian blocks that they do in the newer games. You have to rely on items, and I find
there's
that
no, like, hotels or anything to stay at?
No. So you have, it's basically just managing your items.
Yeah.
And what I've done, you know, I guess part of it is also the fact that they allow you to block so many attacks that you can go through multiple battles without taking damage.
Right.
But it's more like that, and it's also just kind of replenishing your special attacks, which I find, so it's just item management, which I find curious.
How far are you through that game?
I think I'm at the end game. I'm at the castle, and I've taken on the first Cooper Kid.
Okay, and what? So I'm not that far at all. What do you think compared to some of the previous ones? Because obviously, Superstar Saga was just released on the Wii U Virtual Console, and that was my favorite one. But I was also, I guess, when did that come out? 2004, maybe?
2003.
2003. So I was much younger at that time. So it could be nostalgia goggles.
Yeah, it's. I would say that. It's bettered in a lot of ways by successors in almost every regard. It's still a really solid game, but it's really weird kind of trying to rewind your brain to a lot of the stuff they added later on in the games.
Yeah.
One of the things I will give it to them is the simplicity. Like, a lot of the later games, they add that second gimmick so that it becomes less tedious. So the second game adds the baby, so you have four characters control. The third game adds Bowser as a controllable character, so you have that two different gameplay styles. And then the most recent game adds the Dream World, where you kind of are, it's different how you're controlling that world as well. And that's more of a 2D platformer. This one is just Mario and Luigi the entire time, and they show you evolve their skills. I guess I'm just so used to how it controls now, where like the characters kind of remain the same. Here, it's like you got to switch their positions, and each one of them, their weapons control differently. It's basically the same stuff you get later on, the hammer, the screw attack, the long jump, the, I guess you don't get hand powers in any of the other games, I don't think. So that stuff is there. Like I said, it's weird that there's no type of save system. The humor in this game is a lot more over the top, and I think it's the one that's most tied to the Mario games because it's the one that's most, you know, recent with a Mario game. So you have stuff like EGAD showing up, there's a Birdo cameo, there's like the Cooper Kids. And this was a big deal back then because this was the first time the Cooper Kids had been seen in over a decade.
Yeah.
Now they're in like every 2D game, so it's not as big of a deal.
Not to mention Mario Kart 8 as each of their own separate characters.
Yeah. You know, there's stuff like, you realize that the Mushroom Kingdom's an actual kingdom, but you get to visit a Mushroom Kingdom, like, outpost, which is a part of the Mushroom Kingdom you never really think about. Like, you never realize, like, oh, other people probably moved out and settled, and Princess Peach is still their princess because she rules all over these people.
Yeah. What does Princess Peach rule over? Going over Mario 3, every single king is like, thanks for saving me. Here's a letter from the princess. And there are like seven different kingdoms.
Yeah, I mean, there's neighboring kingdoms. There's always been neighboring kingdoms. I mean, this is a neighboring kingdom. The one in Dream Team's a neighboring kingdom.
I guess there's only one princess.
I mean, I guess it's like, oh, like it's kind of like Game of Thrones, where there's different.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kidding. I'm giving a hard time. No need.
I know.
No need
I,
to
I know.
Dive into that.
I know. I've always been curious about the king of the Mushroom Kingdom. Because he doesn't really seem to show up.
He also doesn't really care that his princess is kidnapped.
I know, it's just a shame.
I love that you just compared the Mario universe to Game of Thrones. I think that's the best thing.
It has dragons. Yeah, I guess on that note, and this isn't news, but again, we have nothing to talk about. This weekend, and it really won't help you because this podcast comes out on Monday. Sony's having a flash sale on the PlayStation Network, which I think is awesome. I think it's like 30 games for $1 a piece, which is a fantastic deal. Not much interests me, but I mean, it's a great thing, especially being that a lot of these games are like a decade, 15 years old. There's a bunch of PlayStation 1 games. There's a couple of PSN titles and stuff like that. So, like I said, if you... You know, it's really hard to say no to a game for $1 or 30 cents or whatever you want to do it with. And I think Microsoft has a sale going on as well, but I'm not I know it has, like, Batman and has Borderlands and stuff like that. But it's, you know, I don't know the prices offhand, and I don't even know if it's still going on. Like I said, the PlayStation sale won't be going on by the time this goes up, but I wanted to bring that up because I do think it's an awesome deal. I think it's a mixed message because you want people to keep your PS3 at that point instead of upgrading to a PS4. But if you do still use your PS3, it's a great way to get new games, especially being that there isn't a ton of games coming out for anything in the next, I guess, 6 weeks. That's when Watch Dogs comes out. That's when Mario Kart comes out. If you have a 3DS, it's a great time. You have Kirby and you have Mario Golf coming out soon enough. Okay. So for the other news that we have, and the actual news item we have this week, is Martin O'Donnell has been let go from Bungie after serving there for almost 15 years.
15 years is not long enough. It's a shame because... I don't know, I think he's one of the most talented composers in the industry, and people are going to be bending over backwards to get him on their teams now.
Yeah, so I don't think that he has much to worry about. It was just interesting to see the difference. Because Martin O'Donnell tweeted something along the lines of, as of April, what was it, 11th? I forget.
It's about then.
Yeah, as of April 11th, I've been released without cause, I believe. And then... you know, reaching a Bungie for comment, and there's a blog post that, you know, just basically, you know, giving him compliments and saying that they'll land on his feet or something. So, I mean, we could discuss it. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that he's starting to ask for, or maybe not even he's asking for too much money, but maybe Bungie doesn't believe that the budget or that kind of budget for a soundtrack is crucial to how much their games are going to sell. Because Marty O'Donnell is synonymous with Halo, with that theme, but there are other talented musicians out there too that could create their own, you know, new unique sounds that might, you know, that might go for a little bit less. That's my only thought. Which it's sad, but
I don't know. I really don't know because one thing you'll say, people will say to you is like, oh, what's your favorite thing about Halo? They'll like. Most of the time they'll go, oh yeah, the soundtrack. You know, you don't let the Halo music guy, because he's one of the best people in the industry, and Bungie, I don't believe that there isn't a person at Bungie that believes that he's not. And I don't know. I mean, the release without cause means that he didn't actively do anything wrong. So maybe it is possible, but I don't know. It's kind of weird how they're being quiet about it. That's all.
Well, I mean, you never want to kind of highlight the bad news. Like, what are they supposed to say? Like, you know, I feel like even if they announced a new composer, like, right now, that would not go over well because people might have a negative reaction because this is fresh in their mind. And I also feel like they aren't in the mood to talk about Destiny. I assume when they do next show Destiny, they might have a focus on the music. And if it's good enough, I don't think people are going to care. If it sounds like crap or if it doesn't have a theme that resonates with people, I think that's when you'll have that feedback again.
Well, with it being this far in development, wouldn't Marty O'Donnell still be the composer for Destiny?
I was curious about this now because I don't know. Like, I don't know how video game scoring goes because I know, like, for movies and stuff, like, the score is usually done after the movie's completed and not while, like, some people work hand in hand with the director and stuff like that. Other times it's after the film has been finished and they're kind of scoring it as it goes. So I don't know if video games have done like that or if it's like we create music as we get in footage. So it could be the case where they were ramping up music for this and they realized, like, we could probably get somebody for cheap.
From what I can tell, because the Bungie does a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, they did it with Halo 1, they did it with Halo 2, they didn't do it with Halo 1, they did it with Halo 2 and Halo 3, and they did a bunch of stuff with Reach. It seems like the Marty's very sort of involved with how the game goes, so like when something's done, they give it to him and he makes music for it. So... I don't know. I would have thought that by now, because apparently Destiny's pretty far along in development, he would have done his job.
Well, like I said, I'm really kind of curious. Now I want to get a sound designer on this show to ask them these questions. Because I've never actually thought about it, because there are certain games, like we know like Nintendo does this. Like they do temporary music, and then they kind of, once they kind of get more finished, they'll put it together, because like we've seen like Troy's that they, like Skyward Sword and I think Galaxy both had Troy's to MIDI's, and then they did the orchestrated music later on. Because it make, you know, like you want to make sure everything's finalized before you start putting music to it, and then you have to change it later on. So maybe they had a temporary score, it didn't fit the game, or maybe because this isn't a traditional game, like Halo was a campaign. You had a beginning and end to every chapter. You can kind of score the music for dramatic beats and stuff like that, where this is kind of an open world game. So maybe they thought they needed a different sound for it.
I mean, it is possible. I was just thinking it's too late in development for them to just... They would have done a lot of the music by now.
But again, it depends on, like, they could have, but how long should it take to... Like, they can probably compose a new soundtrack in 2 to 3 months.
I guess so.
And I'm sure there are people... I'm sure there are people who were studying with him, so, I mean, it's not... Like, there's probably people who can get the sound that they want similar, if that's what they want to go for. Like, again, it's, you know, it's just a speculating, but now I'm really curious about...
Hang on, wasn't there something to do with Destiny's soundtrack and Marty collaborating with Paul McCartney? Or I'm fairly sure that was a thing. I don't think they would have just scrapped that. This was announced a while ago as well, so I need to find this out if this was actually a thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
That means, if nothing else, that means they've been working on the soundtrack since last year, so that really does throw a wrinkle in my whole theory. Like I said, I honestly don't know.
I just hope he doesn't go to EA.
At this point, it seems like he might go to Ubisoft, because apparently Ubisoft may have become the biggest game development studio in the world sometime recently. They both have like over 9,000 people who work for them.
Hey, the developer for Naughty Dog, where did she end up?
She ended up at EA.
That's why
I mentioned EA, because, I mean, yes, she's very talented, but I just think that EA is a waste of her talents, because they seem to care more about money than the creative arts.
Let's just say any most businesses do. They just try to hide it. Some hide it better than others. That's that for news this week. We got time to kill, so you folks have anything you want to talk about?
What you just mentioned about Ubisoft becoming the biggest publisher or whatever, that doesn't surprise me considering all their games are churned out and are pretty much the same anyway.
Yeah, I think that's...
I call Ubisoft Montreal just a video game factory, because it just seems to be where they all come from when the Ubisoft label was slapped on them, and they all seem to be pretty much the fucking same.
I think that's what people were saying, and I guess it works for them because they are a successful company in that regard. It's like, I assume Watch Dogs will do well because it looks like, you know, like the same way Assassin's Creed was kind of built on Prince of Persia engine, Watch Dogs looks like it's built in that same design, and I assume the Division might be similar to like Far Cry or Ghost Recon or any of that other game. Like, and that's the other thing, is like, unlike, let's say Activision, for example, if Call of Duty goes belly up, they're kind of shit out of luck because they don't have that backup franchise to replace it, where Ubisoft is continuously refreshing. You know, they're bringing in Watch Dogs, they're bringing in The Crew, they're bringing in The Division. Like, all they need is one of those to kind of be as successful as Assassin's Creed, and if Assassin's Creed dries up, they have a new cow to milk for some time. And then in a couple of years, they come up with a new franchise, and they'll milk those. Or, you know, that's a good thing. The other thing is they also aren't opposed to experimenting. Like, sure, they'll do Assassin's Creed and Just Dance every year, but they're also doing Child of Light later this year. They did Far Cry Blood Dragon. They did Call of Wands. They've done Zombie U. So they do mix it up a bit.
A lot of the stuff I just don't care about, because it's just all the same. And like Far Cry, I mean, I'm glad that they haven't just tried to analyze Far Cry yet, because I think Far Cry is the best thing that Ubisoft come out with. It just surprises me that that Far Cry is the only open world game that they make that seems to have an emphasis on emergent gameplay, which is where open world games kind of shine. But if people don't buy it as much as Assassin's Creed, then I guess there's a reason for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just interesting. I mean, it's really hard because 9,000 people sound like a lot.
It's not really.
It is for a creative endeavor. Like, you know, I mean, I don't even think movies have that many people in a production, but movies work differently than most. I guess movies work different than most other industries in that you don't really have a set crew. You just kind of hire people per film.
Right.
But, like, yeah, 9,000. I mean, there are companies and stuff like that. Sony and Microsoft have more people than that, but they are a multifaceted organization and stuff like that. It's just insane to think about. And it does kind of create some feel. Like, there was 210 people, I think, on Trials Fusion and stuff like that. And
900 people, what, 1,000 people on Assassin's Creed every year?
Yeah, I was about to say, if you've ever beat an Assassin's Creed game and sat through the credits, you know that there's quite
a lot. Well, any Ubisoft game, because for some reason they decide, you know, even though people probably didn't work on Far Cry 3, or whatever, they decide to name everybody that works at Ubisoft Montreal anyway.
But that's still, I mean, that's a nice thing to do, like, you know, especially if people want to move around, you can say, like, my name was in the credits for this game, and stuff like that. So yeah, there's that. So yeah, I mean, I think that's it this week. Okay, just really quick, and I don't even know, this probably won't go too far, but I was talking to Jason yesterday, and he was sharing with me the fact that he has not played a ton of 2D games from yesteryear.
Just period?
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's never played Super Mario Brothers 3, which I've known, and I think we've mentioned on the show once or twice before. So I was asking about, like, similar, popular 2D games from back in the day, which makes me sound old. You know, he hasn't played stuff like Castlevania. He's played Mega Man 2. He hasn't played, like, Vector Man, Echo the Dolphin, Toe Jam and Earl, Fantasy Star.
Those are a bunch of Sega titles.
Well, yeah, I mean, he hasn't played Streets of Rage, Final Fight.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So I was curious, and I, you know, he doesn't listen to this, so you don't have to worry about calling him out. What would be some... 2D games would you recommend somebody trying out for the first time from that era?
I think I'd have to go with... I'm going to go for a broad range of stuff. It would probably be Super Metroid.
Yep.
Yeah, let's say that.
It would be Streets of Rage 2. It would be... And I think Final Fantasy 6.
Super Metroid would be on my choice for sure. I mean, you're going for just the Nintendo 2Ds. You have the Super Metroid, Link to the Past, and Super Mario World. You obviously can't go wrong with those.
He doesn't like Link to the Past.
What's that?
He doesn't like Link to the Past, but yeah.
Why are you even having the discussion? This opinion is completely moot.
Oh, you were. He was on Nasty Code a week before, and he's talking about playing Link Between Worlds and how he doesn't like 2D Zelda games in general.
I mean, I guess that's fine if you're insane, but, I don't just go in blank on stuff. The 2D stuff that I enjoyed, aside from those, like, in-depth ones, that I wish they'd bring back, because you used to have an arcade, was the beat-em-up, I mean, Ninja Turtles beat-em-ups, X-Men beat-em-ups, that's, like, those do show their age, but stuff that I could still continue to play, stuff like Sunset Riders, if y'all played that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even realize how many 16-bit games I played until I started naming off the ones I would recommend. He's played Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, but I'm like, you know, Street Fighter, I've played way too many versions of that. I was one of those kids who had Super, who had Turbo, who had Championship Edition. I had my T-Hawk, what can I say? I've played Crafted Shaq Fu, which I will never forgive myself for. Stuff like Gaming, Streets of Rage, Final Fight. Turtles in Time. I'm a huge fan of beat-em-ups, and I'm really sad that genre doesn't really exist as much anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's still great quarter munchers. I wish they would make new stuff, like, with new franchises, like an Avengers, like, tied in with an Avengers 2 movie, a new arcade.
Yeah, at this rate, they need something good for Avengers. Even though I like the Marvel Ultimate Alliance games and stuff like that, they stopped making those as well. We do get someone, again, and you have that digital shop, so you don't have to sell them for 50, 60 bucks, because it won't fly, but give me a new Turtles beat 'em up that isn't out of the shadows. for 10, 15 bucks. I'll be there. If it's good, four-player online co-op, I would be there day one.
Yeah.
Well, it works for Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, except Scott Pilgrim didn't have online for, like, well, 3 years.
Yeah. But it was a good game when it released.
Oh, yeah, it was. And that's what I mean. Like, there's a market for it. And, you know, like,
Battletoads Double Dragon.
That's another one. He's played Battletoads. He's never... No, he played Double Dragons. He's never played Double Battletoads, and he never played Battletoads Double Dragon, which was a funny thing to find out. Not that he hasn't played, but as an adult, that Battletoads wasn't a franchise that existed outside of video games, because you would, it sounds like something that was kind of a marketing tie-in, but it was just Battletoads. Yeah, but yeah, there are, you have people like, crap, I'm drawing a blank on their names, the people who make Shantae,
WayForward.
Yes, WayForward are fantastic people to get to make like these licensed games on your digital platforms. They make great 2D art. They're pretty solid at this beat 'em up stuff. And again, they don't cost that much, and you don't need a huge team.
I don't want to sidetrack it too much, but this is one other particular news item. Have you guys been following Jules Watcham's Kickstarter for Colt County?
I have.
It's kind of sad to watch. I mean, he has 13 days left, and I think they have, I forget how many. They have tens of thousands when they need about, like, 400.
I think it's half a million, isn't it?
What's that? Just about half a million. And so he has about 1,400 backers, but, like, he pointed to Shantae as something that did well with a Kickstarter, and WayForward got more than enough, but Colt County isn't doing so hot. It's sad. He's a great guy, and he's been really, really nice to Nintendo platforms with Mutant Muds and things like that. But he's just, it's a new IP. I mean, he's trying to go off of people that like Dementium. He said there was a big following there. Did either of you guys play Dementium for the original DS?
I didn't think it was that great, to be honest. I don't think that Renegade Kid's specialty is 3D games, to be honest. I mean, I'm kind of looking forward towards Moon. I hope Moon's good, but I think that, you know, Trisonauts looks very good, and I can't wait for that. You know, Mutant Muds is a great game. I just think that they should stick to 2D games, because I just think they're better at them.
Yeah.
I also think they should have stuck to something a bit more obtainable, because I could be mistaken, I don't know any Kickstarter that has failed and kind of come back and done better. Like, I'm just thinking of Shadows of the Eternals, where they tried to revamp it and all this other stuff, and it failed just as much the second time. And I think part of it was because, like, when this was announced, like, you know, like, they are, like you said, they've been good to Nintendo platforms, but particularly on the DS and 3DS, and then when they came out, this wasn't a 3DS title. So,
what was the goal number for Shadow of the Eternals?
I think the first time it was, like, 1,000,002.
Okay.
And this was for episode 1. That was, I think, part of the problem. It wasn't a full game. It was just the first episode of a larger game and stuff like that.
They wanted $1,000,000 for one episode?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, you know, I also think that a lot of people have kind of been, I don't want to say ruined on Kickstarter, but I do think a lot of it has been that, you know, like, it's been 3 or 4 years since Kickstarter has become a thing, and there are still companies, you know, there's still games that people have kickstarted that haven't come out. There are, you know, we've seen companies that have promised something that they couldn't deliver on the budget that they set out to make. We've seen people who take money from fans and then decide to get a publishing deal anyhow.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of fans have kind of soured on the whole Kickstarter experience after a while. And I think for an unknown, like you said, it's, you know, fan of Nintendo, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the people who support them are kind of known household names, because they do tend to get ignored in the grand scheme of things, but not just by, you know, Nintendo's advertising and stuff, but the general press and gaming, because you kind of see Nintendo systems as the first-party device, so you don't think of stuff like Moon and Dementia when you think of 3DS. You think of, you know, you think of Spirit Tracks, you think of Pokemon, you think of Brain Age, you think of Nintendogs.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest problem with Colt County is that, oh, we're going to be on PC, and we're going to be on Xbox, and we're going to be on PlayStation. Like, why can't you just limit to one or two platforms at first, and then if it works out, then you start branching.
Well, I think it's the same thing that I think there's another one. There's a Wii U exclusive game. I think Hex Heroes that's being kickstarted. And I think the problem with that is if you don't appeal to that audience, then you're kind of, you know, you're up a creek without a paddle because you have to sell it to these. Like, you want to diversify, but yeah, like you said, as an indie developer, you kind of want to. I think part of it was also because it's built on Unity, so it could be easy ported across these things. But you do kind of want to, you want to focus and show that you can do it, especially being that most of his games have been one platform. If it's been anything else, it's been ported up or down. Like his 3DS games become Wii U games, or his Wii U games become 3DS games, and that's it. So you don't have this, you know, like with Tim Schafer and Double Fine, you had the experience of he made a ton of great games, so you knew that, and you knew his name. Like, I lost his name, Renegade Kid. I know the company, but I don't know. I don't know why I should trust them with a first-person shooter, especially being that a lot of their first-person shooters are, you know, they're kind of more atmospheric, and that's not necessarily what people want at times. It's like you wouldn't kickstart a Metroid Prime game.
Oh.
I mean, you would if it was Metroid Prime. But
why are they kickstarting it?
Yeah, but why? But you wouldn't kickstart a Metroid Prime type game because a lot of people don't want that first-person adventure exploration game because it is very slow-paced and people kind of want action and that, you know, stuff like that. So.
And I think the Renegade Kid actually as a company is kind of confuses me because they have Treasonauts, which is yet to come out. There's a couple of they have to update Mutant Muds on 3DS. They've got. Some other game that they're doing. There's Moon Chronicles, yeah. So how can you work on, like, so many games when there's only three people in the company?
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem. And I think the other thing is, and I could have been mistaken, I wasn't there at the start, is, like, the Kickstarter was debuted without any gameplay footage. And I think that's a huge no-no when you're trying to sell people on your game, is, like, show them the actual game in motion, not show them a promise. Because you want to know that this game has been worked on beforehand, and stuff like that. And I guess on the subject of Kickstarter, and this isn't necessarily related to video games, but there was also a Kickstarter for Blue Mountain State, which I don't know if either one of you watched.
Mm-hmm.
It was a show that aired in, it ended like 2 years ago. So, but I think this goes for games as well. It's like, because something does well in a similar genre doesn't necessarily mean that's what people want. Like, we had the Veronica Mars Kickstarter, which did really well. So people are like, oh, the people must want to support these old TV shows, so we'll do Kickstarter. And it's like, we saw that with this, which is, I mean, it's probably going to get funded. They need $1.5 million. They're up to $500,000 in about 6 days. The Melissa Joan Hart did a Kickstarter after Zach Braff did his, and that failed miserably. And we've seen a lot of games that have kind of come out in similar fashions to, like, Double Fine. And what is the big one that did remarkably well? It's like $30 million or something like that.
Spider-Man 2.
Huh? I heard two different answers here.
Space Jam 2.
No, not Space Jam 2.
You're talking about a game?
Yeah.
Star Citizen.
Okay, there we go.
Because that's at $40 million now.
Okay, yeah. And people are like, okay, there's room to put up $40 million. We're going to do this. And the thing is, I've always said the worst way to win a race is to follow behind somebody. You're not going to win by chasing behind them. And this is what happens. It's like people have spent $40 million on something else. That doesn't mean they're going to go around and say, oh, I have money to spend on another Kickstarter or another Kickstarter. I mean, personally speaking, I've only funded about 5 or 6 Kickstarters, but that is a lot of money to invest in stuff that you don't get yet.
I think, I mean, this is just me, but, like, I would never fund a Kickstarter for something that doesn't involve a manufacturing process, because I think that if you have a manufacturing process, like, Let's say a board game. Like, it costs you nothing to design the board game, really. I mean, it would cost you money to get the art and actually to make the boxes. But that can be done in a relatively short time period. Whereas if you kickstart a video game, like you said, you have this problem where 2 to 3 years down the line, you still don't have anything from it. And I have kind of kickstarted a game. And I did it a year ago, and I haven't seen anything of that game since, so...
Yeah, and I think, like I said, I think that's souring a lot of people. I think it was something... I forgot where I read this. I think it was something like 3 out of 4 Kickstarters that people have backed, they haven't seen the final product for yet. And even the ones that people have seen, it doesn't necessarily mean it comes in the format that you want. It's like Double Fine game. We Kickstarted for a final game. Instead, you get like episode 1. And then you get the second half later on this year. So yeah, it's a interesting beast altogether. It's just, I do feel bad for these companies when I see them like them failing. Especially, like, this one isn't really close, but there are some Kickstarters which have failed at, like, you know, like 90% or something like that. And it really sucks when you're that close and you just couldn't. Like, at that point, you might as well just pay yourself.
Right.
But.
Well, isn't that not allowed?
Is it not allowed? I don't. Why wouldn't you be able to back yourself?
I forget what kind of, like, loopholes that incurs.
I guess it could incur that, like, okay, like, I guess if it's a reasonable amount, like, if it, like, say your project is, like, Renegade Kids one, if it's $500,000, and let's say it's at $250,000, and you kickstart $250,000, that's cheap, but let's say it's at $499, and you kickstart $1,000, I think that's reasonable, because that's within the parameters of a normal contribution.
Yeah,
I don't understand why you would do that though, because Kickstarter's going to take a bunch of that, and then you're going to have to.
But the reason is that it's all or nothing. Like, if you don't make that number, then you lose that money anyhow. So you might as well take some of your own personal money and invest it into this product to make sure you get that funding.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. I guess really quick, since we're on Ubisoft and this just came out, I guess Ubisoft has sent out some of their updated lifetime sales for some of their franchises. Assassin's Creed has crossed 73 million.
Jeez.
Just Dance has crossed 48 million.
I'm surprised.
Is it lower? That's lower than I thought it would be.
Is it though? Because I feel like a lot of people. I think part of what killed Just Dance is the transition to this gen, because the Wii U isn't doing as well as the Wii. Because it's one of those games which I think it's gone multi-platform, but I don't think it's helped it any. Tom Spinnerstall is at 30 million, Rainbow Six is at 26, Ghost Recon's at 25, Pets is at 24.
Pets with a Z?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Rayman's at 25, Imagine's at 21, Prince of Persia's at 20, Driver's at 19, Far Cry's at 18, Rayman Raven Rabbids is at 14. I thought Rayman
was evil.
it doesn't make this list. So it's lower than 3 million. we'll put it that much. But Assassin's Creed, I'm curious if Assassin's Creed is impressive or not, because there's been there's like 10 games, if not
more than 10.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, okay. So yeah, that's a hard one to judge, but I mean, 73 million is a huge number anyhow, but when you spread it out against like a dozen titles, it does kind of dilute it a bit. But 73 million in like 5 years, okay, that doesn't sound right. Okay, 7 years, there we go. It's still impressive. That's like 10 million a year. So yeah, there's that. We will be back next week. If there isn't news next week, I think we're going to try our second retrocast, and I think we're going to do Super Mario Bros. 3, partially because it's just out on the Wii U virtual console and the 3DS virtual console for us, and because I want to force Jason to play it.
Yes.
And because I'm going to buy it anyhow, so I might as well talk about it in a context other than this is one of my favorite games of all time, which is why I owned it half a dozen times.
Yep.
So, yes. Anyhow, for Anthony, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 138.